And there it is. The Crazy Gang has beaten the Culture Club. Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Same Old Wombles. We're brought to you by some of us who put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated, still unofficial, and always will be. And of course, non-partisan with the Same Old Wombles. My name is Mark Lewis, and it's a weird and wonderful world if you come from Wimbledon. And we'd like to add our Same Old Wombles commiserations and indeed condolences to the football community on the passing of the late great John Motson, football's man for all seasons. Those quotes, obviously, I've just given you were, of course, his immortal quotes at the final whistle on the 14th of May 1988, when some football team in blue beat some football team in red. Tonight's panel on the Same Old Wombles features Adam Proctor, Niall Cooper, and Matthew Cooper. And on tonight's show, we're going to praise a team that wins games. That'll, of course, be the AFC Wimbledon women's team. And a couple of other shout-outs before we get going. Little review of the Gillingham game. Someone who has a clue about what the government white paper on football governance will make some comments, and Niall will make some comments too. We'll do a little preview of the Stevenage and Mansfield games coming up. And, of course, we'll have some numbers. Welcome to episode 27.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Don't want me shirt for. Can't believe it, Mark. That was the first time that your intro seemed to make sense. It genuinely did. I have to say, those are the most iconic lines. John Motson, sadly missed, but brilliant commentary at the end of our, and it really did sum up that whole day. He was a part of it, wasn't he? And it still takes me back whenever I listen to that commentary, just being on the stands. That was the most incredible moment.
Yeah, see, Brian Moore's got some quotes, and Brian Moore obviously was a great commentator as well, but he wasn't Motson. And Motson just came up with some immortal, wonderful things, and everywhere you go in terms of Googling John Motson quotes, he uses the 88 Cup Final. But every media source anywhere in the world in the last few days when they've obviously done his obituaries have used that, so...
Yeah.
Sad to see indeed, but... The main reason that intro introduction went all right is because for a change, I didn't actually stumble over my words and get anything wrong.
Mark, you have to...
No, it's because you didn't use any obscure references from some sort of weird, 70s band or something. That's why, Mark, it made sense.
Says the man who's so much younger than me and doesn't remember anything from the 70s. So before we dive into talking about the lamentable game at Gillingham, which most of us try to avoid, and sensible people like me who spent the Saturday afternoon watching rugby, there are a couple of nice things I want to shout out about, mainly having had George on the pod last week talking about the AFC women's team. They had an amazing performance, an amazing result at the weekend. The women's team won 4-0 away from home at Hashtag United. And for those of you who don't know, Hashtag United themselves still are top and runaway top of the league in the league that the ladies are playing in. But they've only lost this season up to now, before Sunday's game, 0 games. In other words, they were completely unbeaten and we beat them on their patch 4-0, which is quite outstanding. And there's loads of things bouncing around Twitter for anyone who follows the women's team or follows anyone in the women's team. About how excited they all are about it, and justifiably as well, because it was a fantastic performance and well done indeed. And they also played midweek as well, which midweek playing for the women's team when they got to get around London and South East as full-time employees as opposed to full-time footballers. Easier said than done, but they also beat Ashford Town, so well done to them indeed. The other shout-out I wanted to give before bringing Matt to talk about his brand new launch. A quick shout out to Spike Brits, who some people may know, is an AFC Wimbledon youth goalkeeper and is also the England under 16 goalkeeper. There was a little rumour going around on the internet around the transfer window that supposedly he'd been whisked away to another Premier League club. I managed to get chapter and verse confirmation that that was complete and utter rubbish, because in fact Spike's mother is a friend of my mum's. They used to go to church together in Wimbledon, and I met her at a party in the middle of the transfer window, coincidentally. And I said to her, "I saw this online. Is this true?" And she denied it. And she's a very straightforward, down the line woman. But Spike's just been the goalkeeper for the England 16s, who won the UEFA Development Tournament. They played Cyprus, Scotland, and Denmark, and won all three games, kept three clean sheets, and that is fantastic. And once again, another feather in the cap for Ashley Bayes. But that's enough shout-outs and praise. Let me pass over to Mr. Matt Cooper, who's going to tell us about a brand new launch that he's done in the last half an hour or so with some crowdfunding.
Yeah. Well, hey, first of all, just to say, that women's result was amazing. I mean, to think about how hashtag United has gone the whole season without a loss, and then we thumped them 4-0. It's interesting. I don't know if it's too late now, because a win would take us within 3 points of the leaders, but the goal difference, I'm just looking at hashtag United's goal difference, is like plus 76 or something ridiculous. So, but hey, absolutely fantastic. What a great, and we really, I think en masse, we should really get down there and check them out, because they just are flying at the moment. And I mean, I think there's a problem with the structure of the women's league anyhow, in so much that there's only one up, one down in our, and so it's so difficult to get out of our league. And yet I know in the cup we've been competing with sides above us. So anyhow, amazing. Talking of amazing, so after years of rewrites and planning and whatever it is, I've decided that it's time to go live with putting on a fans club again. So this is going to be a completely revised version of the play, which looks at the formation of AFC Wimbledon in 2002, 21 years ago. It's kind of crazy to think how time has flown. So the play is going to be, it's been rewritten, and it's going to be staged at the stadium, at the ground, in the Silver Lounge, hopefully from the 23rd to the 25th of June. But to make it happen, I need to raise some funds up front. So I need to raise about £8,000, which will ensure that the play can happen. So if you donate in advance, you'll get a ticket, basically. It's basically like selling tickets in advance. So if you donate, you get a ticket in advance. And then there are other rewards as well. So you can get a ticket, and then you can get one of the pieces of artwork that was created last year by Wish as well. And any profits that come from the play will go to Wish as well, so it will support the activities of Wimbledon in sporting history, who are really behind the project as well. So if you want to donate, £20 is the minimum thing, that which will get you a ticket for the play. It's www.crowdfunder.co.uk/p/a-fans-club. We can put that on our link as well, won't we, Adam? So, and the music you hear whenever we do this show, the music you hear is from the original Fans Club soundtrack. But this play, there won't be any music or football gods, I'm sorry to say, but it's there's going to be some interesting text which takes you back to that time. So some real conversations and real words that were said at the time that I think people would find really interesting. It's a great old story. Mark, there, that's my plug.
Guys, then.
Sorry, I didn't hear you there, mate.
If you've rewritten it, the parts of the play, yeah, there are two characters in it called Mr. Fran and Mr. Chies, which always made me laugh. Are you saying, are they out the window?
I'm sorry, mate, they've gone. They've gone. They were in the first one. They weren't in the second one. So Mr. Fran and Mr. Chies were in the first play, not in the second one. In the second play, I had two football gods.
Next, you'll be telling me that the couple always used to snog all the time. They'll be out as well, honestly.
I think you're going to be upset, mate.
That's Matt is doing a very poor job of marketing him. You know, you're supposed to say, but he's replaced them with some of the most amazing artistic genius and characters that epitomize the very spirit of the club. And if you don't go, then frankly, you're not a Wimbledon fan. That's what it's about. Only true Wimbledon fans can go. And the way you can go is by donate. So Matt says donate 20, but what he really means is 500. If you donate £500, not only do you get a ticket, but you get a special pat on the back from the one and only Matt Cooper. What can be better than that? Now, Matt, that's marketing.
Yeah, that's how it works. That's it, Nye. But no, it's going to be, I think the thing about it which is exciting is that I've gone back and looked at some of the text that was written, some of the wording from like the letter that came from Koppel to us all. So incorporating some of that in there. So it's still unbelievable reading back on that. And then all the, you know, all the characters that made the play happen. So I'm bringing all of that to life. It is going to be, I'm very excited by it. It's going to be staged at the club. It's going to be staged in a unique way. It's going to be really, you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting.
So I was going to ask something in that regard. Obviously, we all know the story. We were there, you know. And so there's been lots of talk about, you know, the fact that we've increased our fan base. And, you know, you go and watch some of the Don's vlogs and whatever. The pictures of the people that we see are certainly not our age. And so, you know, is this an opportunity for those fans to kind of get a bit of a behind the scenes as to the setup of the club and how we're going to market it to those that are, you know, under 20 to make sure they kind of see that this the unique, I think the play, again, as I know, will tell the unique story of how we came about. And I think it'll be great if those young fans can get involved. And of course, I'm a big fan of theatre and all those kind of things anyway. So how are we going to do that? How are we going to get out to the TikTok generation?
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things which is hopefully is interesting is you want to know about your history. I mean, I think being part of Wimbledon in sporting history is quite interesting in itself because all the pieces of work that we've done over the last year, you know, I'm just fascinated by the 1963, you know, Amateur Cup final and, you know, some of those older players. So I'm always interested in that. And I'm hoping that people will really want to see how we came into being, because this is one of the biggest stories in football in the last 30 odd years. It's one of the biggest stories, how a club can be allowed to move to a completely different area and all the fans go, you, we're going to start again, and then go all the way through the leagues to be where we are now, to have our own stadium and be a league club. That's the story you need to tell us. You need to understand the passion that's got us to this situation. And I hope that people seeing the play will, you know, get a real insight to what we've all achieved. And all the young people that come along to go, they're part of their story. You know, they're part of why we exist and why we have this amazing stadium. So I'm hoping that they can see. And, you know, you have to bear in mind what we achieved with absolutely nothing. And now we've got a base to work on. And I know people think that a fans run club can't get to places, but we've got where we are being a fans club, and who knows where we can go in the future. But yeah, so I'm hoping people would. And in terms of publicizing it, you know, obviously we're going to get out through social media and also standard things as well. We're going to go in the program and all of that to promote it. But this is a great opportunity to see your history brought to life in our stadium.
So there was the other thing there was a bit of a discussion about was, like, you know, making sure that there was a bit of more of a buzz when players come out and that they play the right music and that some of those digital signboards maybe do something. You know, is there any chance that we can get Philo to maybe play some of the songs from the original play, maybe get some stuff on those digital signage? I don't know how we do that. Maybe Mark knows, maybe someone else does. But that would be great if we could figure out ways kind of to get stuff around the club. Because as we know, some of that digital signage is insanely bright. And that will attract the attention of anyone with better eyes than most of us.
It's insanely bright until Lee Brown kicks the ball at it. Yeah, I mean, it'd be wonderful to explore that. And, you know, I've been talking to the club as well, who are behind, who are supporting. So, yeah, we just need to get in with Philo and other people as well and get this out and promoted as widely as possible. Because, you know, to be honest with you, we need that base funding to make it happen. And then from there, we will be selling tickets after the crowdfunding campaign. But, you know, we need that money in place to start.
Well, I stick my 20 quid in or whatever I can afford because I've just been paid, fortunately. Sensible time to launch it, by the way, at the end of the month when people have been paid. Obviously, I get my ticket or whatever, but if you then end up, I mean, I'm sure you will successfully get to the minimum base you need, but if you don't, then do people lose their money or they get their money back?
No,
or what?
All the money comes back. If we don't raise it, it doesn't happen. The money goes back.
All right. Well, I'm sure that won't happen, but just so simple people know that they're not just putting money out there.
If the money isn't raised, it goes back. So that's the way it works.
Cool. Good man. Well,
so the started now? You want to raise £8,000 as a minimum. When's the end date? So when do people have to make sure they're in?
At the moment, it's 4 weeks. 4 weeks. From the 27th, so
4 weeks from today.
4 weeks from
the March, essentially.
Yeah, that's right. Towards the end of March, is the time we've got.
Anyone would think Matt had been involved in funding and arts and anything else like that.
I mean, I'm hoping that people will be excited and interested in it. You know, and then back leading them to football, it helps if the side wins a few games. That helps to raise the interest. So last weekend, I have to say, I just woke up with a sense of gloom. And even when we took the lead, I was just like, oh, here we go.
Good segue there, actually, into last weekend. Because, you know, in a away game with Gillingham, those of us who have been to Gillingham know it's an uncovered terrace. You get freezing cold even if you go there in the middle of the summer. And I saw one really awful game a few years ago. Piggott got the 1-0 win, and we scraped a 1-0 win then. But I don't really remember us doing anything very much. And we even managed a situation where Shea Alexander, who never managed to hit anything more than the barn door whilst playing for us, managed apparently to hit a worldie from 30 yards to score the winner for Gillingham, which is major frustrating. But yeah, the first thing I wrote down is unnecessary defeat, because it seems like with the players we've got, we now appear to have a striker in Ali, the Scouse Iraqi, who knows where the goal is. Decent finish, running in over the top with some pace up front. But we just, well, the team was disrupted big time. And it seems like we've got a number of injuries, which we can talk about in a bit. And that's not really going to help our case to get any kind of settled team. We've still got a number of games left coming in thick and fast.
I think it goes back to that centre-back absence really at the moment. So it's that, you know, we're missing Pierce, we're missing Kalambai. You know, up until the horror show that was Hartlepool, when the horror show at Hartlepool really only started when Pierce went off, you know, we've got a defence that's kind of almost in a settled state of mind. And I think once that's back and we've got kind of a bit more, there's potential in the team. I see a lot of people talking about the issue that might be that while we might be good enough to make playoffs, we're probably still quite short of a League One team. That's where I kind of think, we're better than where we are in the league. I think we totally have got the potential to do better, but it's just, you know, we just need a bit of luck, really, don't we? You know, anybody who looks at football and goes back over the years will know that if any team in any division can go through the season without injuries of significant level, they're going to finish in the top half. That's just kind of the way it is. As soon as you pick up key injuries, then you're going to have a problem. Now, that's what's happened to us. So I think if we were, you know, look back through our history, the seasons that we've had, the best seasons are probably the ones when we've been most injury free. And that's where we just need a bit of slice of luck. If we could go for the rest of the season without any more injuries, then I think we'll be there or thereabouts come the end of it.
I wish I had your faith, Noel. I think we've blown the playoffs. And for me, it went in that last 30 seconds against Hartlepool. when that goal went in, I just thought, you know, I don't know, it just felt like the wind's come out of our sails. So what is it? What's a successful season? I'm guessing a top half finish would be good, something for us to build on. But again, I guess the thing is, and you know, people are saying this, aren't they, on social media, that our January window hasn't worked for us. We might have got a better team, so to speak, but we have to embed these people into the club in no time at all. They've had to come in, you know, running, and it just hasn't happened. And you lose, I mean, I know I've said it before, you lose someone like Asal, and that's a big loss. So I think we've got some good players in, but it's taking them time to embed. So maybe towards the end of the season we'll pick up, but we're now 10 points off the playoffs, and I can't see that. So I don't want to say it, but it feels like we're almost playing for pride, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought we might still be in it if we beat Gillingham, and of course we didn't. So, I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that we're going to be just trying to finish as high as we can, and I do think we should try and finish as high as we can. Did the January transfer window not be as good as we expected? No, actually, I thought it was pretty good, generally. I think we've got something to build on, so that's quite a nice thing. I mean, the main thing is, like, I only saw the highlights because Gillingham Kent is further away than the other Gillingham, and I was when the train tried to suggest I go somewhere else. Was that the Zanef was like pulling off some immense saves at various points, and I think he's kept us in lots of games, as we know, because of the amount of clean sheets, etc. And again, that, you know, we have got to worry about us losing our amazing goalkeeping coach, etc., because we seem to be, that's a big thing for me. I just kind of think, how are we going to shore up the defence again a little bit more to stop those kind of shots coming off? But yeah, I think the playoffs are now dead and buried, unfortunately, and it's a case of finishing as high as we can, giving the fans as much exciting football towards the end of the season, knowing that we're not going to get relegated. I think players should just go for it and try and, you know, show off and whatever, whether that means that they then get a better sale or whatever. I'd rather us just kind of go for a flare at the end of the season now.
And so even if we're not going to necessarily, you know, get in there any higher than 10th or 11th or so, if we go into games, even if we're going into Stevenage with a weakened squad, which we'll touch on in a bit, as well as Mansfield and future games, if we've got one or two longer term injuries, it seems like we have, because we only ended up with six people on the bench on Saturday. We've got a bunch of the kids out on loan, but the reason they're out on loan is because we know that they're not durable for League Two, and some of them may never be durable enough for League Two. So we have to do with what we have to make do with what we have, really. I've heard and read a few things on social media saying that Davidson may be injured for long term. That may be the case. To be honest, I don't want to say it's inevitable, but perhaps it is, because he's played every single minute of every game virtually. And now we have another striker in Ali, but we only have one striker.
I mean, that's what we said, though, isn't it? Loads of us said we need someone to like be there to replace Davidson if he gets tired, let alone injured, you know, and so that is, you know, that's a big deal, and something that, I mean, we've said this before, like I've said it before, I don't know anything really about what we need to do, but I was like, sure, we can't just have Davidson being the key kind of piece, and yeah, that is a little worrying, obviously.
And what's happened to PK as well? I mean, I think there are certain things which just frustrate me is, you know, we heard about Pierce being out, but what's happened to PK and DJ? I mean, we have no idea what's the extent of that injury, because, you know, otherwise we're going to be playing the same system we played at the weekend, and that's hard to put Will back into that, playing, you know, he's been out for so long and then having to play two games in a week where he hasn't played for months. So I'd be really nice to know what's happened with PK, and is Pierce going to be fit as well?
It exactly what information we may have. I mean, there's a long interview with Ali they put on the website today, which is just about Ali, and he's a new striker, which people like. And he can be a fan's favourite because he clearly seems to get the club and get the idea and be grateful for the opportunity. But that's focusing on any crumbs of positivity we can bring, really, which after you've just lost to Gillingham, there really aren't very many. Okay, we'll come back to talking about the future games in a bit. The main thread of tonight's pod, because he's been involved in it and he's been interviewed on various different interesting news channels about it over the last 72 hours or so. Niall can fill us in relating to the announcement that was made at Plough Lane with the sports minister and the appropriate DCMS ministers, and of course Danny Macklin getting some publicity for us as a club, namely the government white paper about football governance. And if you can, Niall, talk us through it in layman's terms, because I'm interested in understanding, as a football fan of our club in League Two, and also as a football fan of someone like a Chelsea or Premier League club, what actually is in it for us? Because a colleague at work asked me this, and I couldn't really explain it very well. So over to you, my friend.
Regulators. We regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good, too. But you can't be any geek off the street. Gotta be handy with the steal, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Regulators! Mount up! It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warren G was on the streets, trying to consume some skirts for the E, so I could get some phones. Rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC, on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. Seen a car full of girls, ain't no need to tweak. All of you search, know what's up with 213.
So I hooked a left on 21 and Lewis, some brothers shooting dice.
So right, so I mean, there's a lot in it for us. And I think the changes were momentous, right? So there are loads of things in here that we've been wanting as a club for absolutely ages. Obviously I've been doing this with Fair Game for a long time. And what we've got is you've got a new financial regulation that's coming in. It's basically going to mean that anybody who comes to look at buying a club has to present a 6-month business plan about how they're going to do that and make sure they have sustainable income that is there, and look at, there'll also be looking at how much you spend on players' wages. Now, where this is really significant for FC Wimbledon is the UEFA recommended amount is 70% maximum. This is maximum amount. 70% of your revenue should be spent on players' wages. Now, FC Wimbledon are one of the very few clubs that actually keeps within that limit. So imagine that all other clubs were so supposed to actually to then be also within that limit. It makes it much more of a level playing field. So that whole idea of clubs spending ridiculous amounts of money on wages means that that will come down. So we will become more competitive. So that's obviously a very significant moment for us. Then we can look at corporate governance. So corporate governance is about how your boards are set up, how you're the kind of the fit and proper owners test also comes into this. So that is, again, we'll be looking at not having people that are disqualified from being bankrupt, all this sort of other stuff that comes in, making sure you actually have people that aren't, lo and behold, like serious criminals, which does happen in football at the moment. So they would be stopped. Again, that will obviously doesn't affect us, but would affect other clubs. So you again getting that level playing field of getting the good behaviour that we have being rewarded, which is great. Then I suppose the big one for us is things about protecting club heritage. So this is going to be really close to our hearts. So not allowed to change your club badge without permission of your fans. The same goes to your club home colours, to your club's name. That can't be changed. But the most significant is you're not allowed to move your club from outside the area for which it takes its name, which I suppose for Wimbledon fans might be particularly valuable for us. What I found astonishing was the Milton Keynes MP welcomed the white paper and were like, hypocrite comes to mind massively on that one. Then there's issues about proven supporter engagement. Obviously, as a fan-owned club, we are doing really well on that. But those are all the kind of like good things, if you like. But there are two really notable bits that actually have got me livid. Before I go into those, I'll let Mark ask me a question and I can kind of elaborate a little more.
I was just going to ask, in terms of the fit and proper owners thing, you've got situations right now where obviously Newcastle has been taken over. You had the final yesterday in the League Cup between Newcastle and Man United. The bids that have gone in for Man United allegedly include people from the Far East. And these guys have got money sloshing around and have been able to buy and manipulate, it seems, everything that they wanted to in business for their whole lives. Is there anything in these new regulations which would actually stop that type of thing, or at least keep it somehow in check?
Honestly, Mark, I don't think there is enough. This is one of the issues that I've got, that Fair Gang have got with it. And so, I've been spending the last 48 hours speaking to a lot of chief executives and owners of football clubs in particularly League One and League Two and some of the National League. And there is a lot of concern about where the kind of powers that the regulator has. So there's a lot of good words said in here, but our concern is about whether it has the teeth, whether it has the ability to act. The ethos behind it says advocacy first. Now, the phrase advocacy first is a massive red flag to me, because if you're looking at the powerful lawyers and legal teams of exactly the organizations that you're talking about versus an independent regulator whose staffing is going to be minuscule compared to that, unless it's given proper powers. So I think there is a concern about whether we've done enough. So on paper, it looks good, but the reality is, certainly human rights issues or the issues of Qatar or Saudi Arabia taking over a football club, a state taking over a football club, aren't really being addressed in this paper. And that's something to be concerned about and something that I would hope that a strong lobby comes towards on that. But that's still, for me, isn't the biggest issue that concerns Wimbledon. There is one particular element in there that's even more. But has anybody else got any other questions before I go on to my big concern and anger about what's going on? Adam?
Oh, yeah, a couple of things. One's probably a comment. I suppose we should give benefit of the doubt to the Milton Keynes MP. Interestingly, for me, the big thing in that space is that I kind of wish they would take ownership of their club and kind of move away from this. So maybe this MP being positive about this change might encourage the club to stop being so ridiculous and actually take hold of, and I've said this online and various times, take hold of their ownership of being Milton Keynes. And actually just kind of step away from some sort of weird wanting to be the hated football club and wanting to hate us and all that kind of jazz. Anyway, I'm sure many won't agree with me. That's fine. I don't agree that the club should exist, but I kind of wish they would also just take ownership of their own space now and say, yeah, we killed Milton Keynes Town. We did kill a football club. We've got a football club now. Let's be our football club. So I don't know. Maybe the MP's a nice guy. I don't know. Anyway, the actual question I have is this: the 70% thing. So in terms of the 70% thing, obviously, some, like you said, most clubs are spending way over that. What is there anything in the white paper that indicates a time frame for clubs to get within that spending thing, or how we're going to, because we've signed a massive, an insane transfer window, all kinds of stuff that's recently been happening at the Premier League. What's going to happen to, how are we going to ratchet down the clubs that are already spending that amount of money on their wages? Because people aren't just going to suddenly want less of a wage.
This is one of my big issues. Right. So there's talk about being a hard wage cap, which if that happens, then potentially that you'd be talking about losing license. So every football club gets a license to play. Now, at what point do they actually deliver that idea of threatening to take away a license? So I'm really quite, again, sceptical about whether they get to that point, which is my big worry. So this is a bit about where it has teeth. But I think the other thing that is we're not talking about, that I think we really, really need to be talking about, is financial redistribution and the kind of element about the parachute payments and the element about how you actually look at distributing football's wealth. Because what you should be doing is looking towards a structure that means that you incentivize football clubs. So the better they are run, the more money they get. That's where you start seeing change. Because if it was beneficial for a football club financially to stay within 70% of their you know, of their revenues being spent on players' wages, along with loads of other financial elements that they should be doing, then at that point you will start seeing behavior change straight away. Now let's talk a little bit about where the financial regulation, financial flow is a mess, right? The whole argument's been about parachute payments and the difference between the Premier League and the Championship. That actually really only concerns 12 clubs, the six at the bottom of the Premier League and the six at the top of the Championship. Now, I'm kind of aware there's an awful lot of other clubs that exist in the Football League that exist out there, and we're getting nothing out of this deal. So financially, there is nothing. The whole debate is not there. The EFL splits their funds that they get 80% to the Championship, 12% to League One, 8% to League Two. There is a massive gulf between the Championship and League One, and there's a massive gulf between League One and League Two. Now, we're all being told that we need to massively overspend to compete. That's why the Bury Macclesfield went down. That's why Southend are about to go bust. That's why Oldham are in shit. These are not clubs in the parachute payment clubs. This is not clubs in the Premier League. The problems, the clubs that are going to go are the clubs that are suffering because of 80-12-8. That's the argument that we need to be having. If you want to change culture, and if you want to secure football, then get rid of 80-12-8, get clubs being rewarded on how well they are run, and you will see culture change, and you will see people moving towards the sustainability that we need. And we're not getting that at the moment. What annoyed me about the club statement that happened over this weekend, this week, was that they were going, oh yeah, this financial deal is all fine. No, it's not. The financial deal on the table is rubbish. It's absolutely rubbish for us. It's rubbish for AFC Wimbledon. And until we kind of grasp that and go, right, because all the talk from the EFL and the Premier League is nothing to do with the clubs at the bottom of the Championship, League One, League Two, and lower. It does nothing for us. And we've got to break that naivety to think this is a good deal. It is not a good deal for financial redistribution. And we have to really address that. That parachute payment, one parachute payment is 44 million. That is more than all the clubs of League One, League Two, National League, National League North, South, and the women's game get put together. That's one club, one parachute payment, more than 140 others. It's just like, we've got to wake up. AFC Wimbledon have got to be campaigning along with a load of the other CEOs and directors and owners that have been talking to me over the last 48 hours, saying that's the argument. If I was saying to all the AFC Wimbledon people, we've got to get out there, we've got to be loud, because there's only going to be one time to fix it. And at the moment, we're on the losing side here. I think, I don't know, who's first out, Adam and Mark. Those who are listening in, the fingers just all went up like mad, apart from my brother, who's like kind of disagreeing.
Right, but therefore there's nothing in this white paper that says the parachute payment thing should be abolished and the redistribution of funds from TV should be reviewed to the benefit of League One, League Two.
Yeah, so you were doing really well until you mentioned that last bit. Right. Yes, they will be redistributed, but what it will do is it will create a merit system within the Championship. There is no conversation going on about whether any of that money goes to League One or League Two. What it does is it will make the difference between the bottom of the Premier League and the bottom of the Championship closer, because they'll all be getting more the merit, but the money will be divvied up primarily in the Championship. We get very little benefit about the abolition of the parachute payments. And the EFL, the Articles of Association, so that's the thing that sets their constitution, says that it has to be 80-12-8. Well, it's fine. You then go, okay, well, we'll vote and change the Articles of Association. Except the voting structure of the EFL is weighted massively towards the Championship, who have half the votes. So they're not going to vote to change. So you're left with the only way that financial redistribution is going to work, or the framework, the financial flow framework, is going to work to benefit AFC Wimbledon, is that whole thing needs to go to the regulator. It needs to get out of the Premier League and the EFL. You need to have somebody who holistically looks at the benefits, because that's the only time you're going to be able to deal with the growing gap between the Premier League and the Championship, and the massive gap that exists in League One and League Two, who are, after all, just an afterthought. The EFL are not really speaking for us at the moment in that level on League One and League Two. And that's where AFC Wimbledon and a lot of other clubs need to get their acts together and go, right, we need to do something. We need to be really lobbying hard, because at the moment, it's going to do very little for us.
And the media didn't cover that bit. They just covered the old, look, it's a new football regulator. And David Sullivan said, you know, this is not a great thing to allow the government to regulate, because the government, they haven't got a clue how to organise the way out of a plastic bag. And that's the kind of thing that made headlines, unfortunately.
I mean, there was lots of good stuff, like all the kind of... laws and the tweaking of the fan engagement and the protecting of the heritage. There's lots of nice stuff in there, but the fundamental issue about whether a club actually exists. I mean, it's like great to protect your fans, but if your club isn't there, then what's the fucking point? Sorry, Adam, that's one for Adam to bleep out. But like, that's where we need to be putting our effort in. That's where we really need to ramp it up. It's like this regulator needs to have teeth, and this regulator needs to have control of the framework, the financial flow framework of football, which it doesn't at the moment. And that framework is broken. Adam.
Yeah, a couple of things, like, because I know less, I obviously know less about the white paper than you do, clearly. And you've talked about incentives being really, you know, useful. And in terms of, so I'm guessing that you're saying that clubs that live within their means and do things appropriately effectively should be incentivized by getting increased payments through this pyramid scheme, through the TV, etc. So I think that makes complete sense generally. And I think, you know, that's sounds great. I guess the question then is, does the, you know, in terms of what the white paper says, is it strong enough for those kind of things to happen? And if so, how do we ensure that the white paper does what it says and doesn't get taken over by the Premier League owners and those kind of things to actually make it function for English football? Because obviously the headlines for us are, oh, protecting the crest, protecting the club's name, protecting the thing. Of course, every fan's going to get behind that. But those things should have been protected anyway, right? That's pretty much should have been protected anyway. The problem with football isn't that, because we only know of one club that was franchised and it was ours. The problem with football is the money and the distribution from the TV rights, etc., through the pyramid scheme that is inappropriate in terms of the men's football, inappropriate in terms of the women's football, all that kind of stuff. Is the white paper strong enough to stand against those things and to actually incentivize clubs who behave in an appropriate business practice to benefit from it or not? Because if it isn't, then we do have a massive problem.
At the moment, this is a consultation process. What's written on paper, as we've seen it, is weak. But it's also vague. So what we have an opportunity to do is, and this is why our club needs to be making a massive song and dance about it and needs to be reaching out to as many other clubs in League One and League Two. Because if you look at where those clubs are based, they're all in marginal, a lot of them are in marginal seats, right? We have a real opportunity to make a massive political voice and say, right, if you really care about your club and your community and actually the investment that can come into your club, then you have to be backing this. And that means the clubs need to make that stand and say, right, we want you to make a real difference on financial flow because you're not at the moment. In terms of that bit about rewarding well-run clubs, but fair game, we've created a sustainability index that rates all the clubs on how well they score on things like good governance, financial sustainability, community engagement, fan engagement, equality standards, right? So we've rated all the clubs. They're using existing metrics, well-respected metrics that have been established for a long time. All we've done is just put them together and create a rating system. If we start using that as a way, and we obviously we can sharpen it and improve it, if we start using that as a way to get money, so basically you've put all the TV revenue into one big pot and you say, right, if you're willing to apply to this grant, this funding, then you can get it that way because it's saying you agree with the sustainability index as a model, and that's how you get your money. That sort of thing would massively benefit AFC Wimbledon because, let's be honest, we actually are quite a well-run club. And the reason why we struggle is because there's a load of other people that don't pay a blind bit of difference to the rules and regulations that are out there, or they don't care about the penalties. And if this regulator doesn't have any teeth, which at the moment it's talking advocacy first, so it may not have any teeth at all, it's going to make no difference. So if we want to change the system and make it better, and that does mean it would benefit AFC Wimbledon, then we have to bloody fight for it. And at the moment, I'm not convinced that we have shown enough fight, and I think we need to, because I can tell you there are other clubs out there that are fighting far stronger than we are for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the big issue I see, I think, is, like you say, how do you penalise anyone who goes against the white paper? You know, what penalties are there? I mean, if you start talking about not literally kicking sides out of the league, or even on a more basic level, dropping points, then people start to get worried about it. I also think that probably those sides near the top of the Premier League, top half of the Premier League, this doesn't bother them at all because, you know, they're already making their money. They're probably not spending 70% of their money on wages, or it's there and thereabouts. And I think the issue is, say, take a side like Nottingham Forest, who I know in the Championship were well overspending on, you know, whatever it is, 150, 200% overspent. But now they've got into the Premier League and establishing themselves. So when their accounts come out for next year, when they're in the Premier League, they might be saying, because you get so much money there, they might actually be under 70% of what they spend. So all these sides in the Championship are just gambling. They're gambling, you know, as much as they can to make sure that they do get to, in a way, a more sustainable model. But, you know, you have so many sides gambling on that, it's ridiculous. And I think that I'm right in saying the Championship is the most unsustainable league, which is why sides drop out of it and they drop down. You know, you have to look at Bolton, Portsmouth, whoever else is floating around, you know, in our league and the league above. And I think the other thing that I'm slightly concerned about is the way that the Premier League are involved in this. It feels like they are, one thing that this might not stop is a Premier League 2.
Yeah, I mean, on that, the Premier League 2, that's probably one of the things that stops the EFL from reforming, because they're scared of the Premier League 2. But that's where your financial flow needs to come through and needs to be controlled by a regulator and looking at how you do it, because at the moment, it's just not working. You know, you've got that whole gambling culture you just mentioned, Matt, is exactly the reason why the Championship is the complete basket case that it is. But the knock-on effect of that is that anybody who tries to compete with the Championship or try to get up there, then the risks are enormous, because people talk about not many clubs are folded, but when a club goes into administration, and there have been 64 administrations since the Premier League was formed, what happens is all those businesses go out of business. You know, they all fold. It's not harmless. You know, you've got all the community people that are around it, they're all struggle and all that sort of stuff. So anybody says this is it's a harmless industry when club goes to administration and restarts again. No, it's not. You know, there is something fundamentally wrong when you're talking what? I mean, that's like two-thirds of the businesses are going into administration. What other industry sector has that sort of thing, you know, or like allow, you know, it's a basket case. It needs sorting out. And the football authorities who are busy supposed to be sorting out a deal between themselves are clearly not in a good enough place to do it. I think the EFL, the people in there are actually in a kind of relatively all right space, but their articles of association mean they can't change anything. They're completely hamstrung. It needs to go away from them. Adam.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everything you've said it makes perfect sense to me. In terms of the people that can't see the wood for the trees, I'm an Arsenal fan. Why would I be interested in this?
Football's built on the pyramid. It's built on the kind of magic of what football is. It's built on that ability for Wimbledon to do a Wimbledon. You know, that's what it's built on. But also, if you looked at the last squad from the Euros, the World Cup squad even, 22 of those players had had a Football League experience, right? They'd played in the Football League. So it's not just about, it's where do these players develop? Where does that kind of grassroots go? Where does the community spirit stuff goes? That's what it's about. And I think if you want to pull out the drawbridge and just be your elite six, then that's what the Super League was. And you saw the reaction from most Arsenal fans on that. There is a magic in football. There is a community in football. And that's what needs protecting. And the white paper went halfway there, but there's an awful lot to do. And we need to really come together and battle hard for it. And that's why I kind of see it. I ought to shut up, because for one time, actually, Mark, I'd like to try, you know, maybe we might actually keep to time on this podcast rather than me rant on. But I could go on about this for a very long time, as everybody knows.
So I put a timer on you. What else can you summarise in 2 minutes now?
2 minutes on the white paper. This is our moment. This is the moment that football's been waiting for a very, very long time. We've never got closer to this level of reform. There is a lot that's good to see that's changing there. We need to go the extra mile. As a club, we need to really push on. We need to reach out to as many other clubs, and we need to become a really strong voice, and we need to be around that table. And at Fair Game, we've been doing that tirelessly for the last 2 years. There's a whole load of us that are doing that. You know, obviously, I'd want you all to back Fair Game. You know, follow us on Twitter and all the rest of it, Fair Game UK. But primarily, this is a message to those people who kind of run football clubs. Go out there and do this. Go out and get involved. We need to make something. We need to have a fair financial flow in football. And this is our time. What a great title for a book that is.
Very slick. 49 seconds left. Well done, sir. Okay. Going from the sublime to the ridiculous once again, that's all very heavy and very serious, but also very important stuff to talk about. The future of football and the opportunities to actually keep the situations where football clubs are local and represent their communities, to actually maintain that rather than just forgetting about that. Going back to the sublime, we would like to hope opportunities for us on the pitch. Let's just talk about very quickly coming up in the next 4 or 5 days, 2 games back to back at Plough Lane. We've got Stephen is coming up, who have been leaders for some time, and Steve Evans in his very robust way, and Stephen in their very robust way, seem to have reverted to type way back to the days when Graham Wesley was in charge and Darius Charles was in the centre the centre of their defence, of having a very mean defence, keeping loads of clean sheets and storming right at the top of the table. They have, however, stumbled recently, but we look like we're going into that game potentially without Pell, without Woodyard, without Davison, without Pierce, obviously without Billa, who's been out for a while and doesn't look like he's going to be back for another 3 or 4 weeks or so, potentially also without Jaisemi for a period of time as well. If these are all internet rumours and 2 and 2 = 6 type gossip, but do we have any crumbs of comfort or confidence that we could cobble together an 11 that could be competitive for that game and then immediately after that, Mansfield as playoff contenders?
I think we can cobble together an 11, Mark. Whether that's going to be a competitive 11, I don't know. I mean, I've always had this thing about Wimbledon, and I don't know if other fans have this as well, is that if you are on a bad run, the side you want to play is Wimbledon. I always find that. I always find that we're your bounce back club. And I can't remember, there's been other instances. Whenever someone says, oh, this side haven't won a game for like 7 matches or 10 or however long it is, I always put my head in my hands. So Stevenage on a bad run and I just go, oh, that's not what I want to hear. You know, I'd rather us be playing Mansfield, to be honest with you. It feels like, and again, that's good. I mean, these are really tough games. That's why the last 2 games were so important for us in terms of getting up the league, because we had chances against Hartlepool and Gillingham, which could have put us and given us that bit of confidence as well, a bit of push. But yeah, I'm nervous for both these games. As particularly as if myself or Niall has to be drafted in.
The amusing WhatsApp message on Saturday evening from a Duns Trust board member who said that they'd seen Johnny Jackson's wife and post-match on Saturday. And said that she should let him know that if we were really that short, this bloke would actually chip in. And if you wanted a really dodgy, not particularly fit left back, then he was available. I hasten to add, this guy is actually closer to the age of our playing squad than any of the people on this pod tonight. But even so, I'm not sure necessarily that he's the type of person that should be fit for selection. Or chosen for selection. So what do we do? Do we bring back, if these injuries are long-term, do we bring some of these kids back? Do we have any choice? We have to.
Yeah, no, totally. Why not? why not go to town? I don't, as much as I want us to finish as high as possible, why not go to town with, get some people out there, get some, you know, do it. You know, it's worth it. Sure, it's going to be a tough game because both these teams that we're playing against are certainly performing beyond us at this point. But why not put the youngsters up against, a tough opposition? You might as well now. I think it's worth it.
I'm in two minds, Adam. I think the issue you've got is you've got, young kids. If young kids get like absolutely mullered, then it's not a great experience. At the same time, you know, there's, if you're good enough, you're old enough is the argument. And we're not far off a situation where we can try a few things out. I still think I've still got that little glimmer of hope, but you know, it's a glimmer. And I know Adam and Matt have thrown in the towel. I haven't quite yet. But then, you know, maybe my mind went blank after the Hartlepool game and I've totally wiped it off all sorts of my memory, but I think maybe in a couple of games time, if we're not getting any of the results, then yeah.
I mean, I think we still have to not be too arrogant. I mean, I know that we're a long way off, but we need to make sure that we stay in this league as well. And I always get confused because we had them both last year, but who's the guy on loan at King's Lynn? Cosgrove? It's Cosgrove. So, I mean, he's on a shorter term loan deal. So, you know, if we've got strikers that are not fit, then bring him back. Obviously, Zach's going to be at Dundee for the remainder of the season. Now that's all done and dusted. And I think other players that have gone out on loan, they're out for they're away now, probably until the end of the season as well. So I'm not sure. My feeling would be if there's like Dave Fisher, he's scoring goals as well. But I just don't know if we can get these people back. And, you know, if there are young players around our squad anyhow, but JJ was reluctant to put them on the bench the other day. It's the squad that we've got, really.
I suspect as much for JJ as it is for us as fans, is he's gone from saying, you know, we have 21 and we can't fit everybody into the squad, to then obviously not being able to actually fill a whole bench. I think you've got a situation where you've got more players in certain positions, some of the wide positions, than we have in certain other positions. All of a sudden, we thought we had about six centre-backs and Will was never going to get a place back in the team, and he's straight back in the team. And as Matt said earlier on, we'll have to play back-to-back games, which is never good for anyone who's played multiple games. And ultimately, Pierce played four or five weeks in a row without any breaks after Towler left. And ultimately, when he should have been rested, when I was literally thinking to myself in that Hartlepool game, because we were 2-0 up, maybe we can take him off. And then before that, we had a chance to do that. He got injured, and the rest, as they say, is history. And who knows when we'll see him this season or for how long. Anyway, without we need to end on a downer, that's the reality of life as the Wimbledon fan. You know, not always necessarily sweetness and roses, but let's face it, some of us may well remember Steve Evans as Crawley manager coming to King's Meadow in a situation where the defensive resources were so stretched that we played Ed Harris, Fraser Franks and Chris Bush in our defence. And all three of them together, probably combined age was about 55. And we won 2-1. And some bloke called Kebble scored. And money can't buy you those T-shirts anymore. So, yeah, that a result like that would be absolutely sweet. Absolutely sweet. Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We're going to finish off and round up with our numbers this week. Our numbers this week are all about the last 10 games and how have we done, what we've achieved or what we haven't achieved. So let's go, first of all, for Matt. Matt's number is number 2.
Number two is our performance against Hartlepool and Gillingham. I think, is it right? Is that in the last 10 games, we've only lost 2 games? Is it something like that?
If only it was as positive as that.
We've only got 2 points. We've only got 2 centre backs. We've only got 2 centre backs. That's what it is. And one of them is JJ. Yeah.
He's a left back. And the other one is Rob Toomey. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, dear me.
In the last 10 games, we've actually only won 2 games.
All right. Okay. Yeah, they are. I'm slipping into positivity.
Absolutely. Swiftly followed by Niall's number, which is number 11. And again, it relates to the last 10 games.
Number of goals we've conceded.
Nope.
Number of goals we've scored.
Nope.
Number of bookings we've had.
No, it's more than that. We are bottom of the fair play list.
Is it the 11? Number of injuries we've had. 11. Number of points we've got over that period. That's what it'll be.
That's all it is. It's as simple as the number of points we've got in the last 10 games. Correct.
I know that. I didn't know that. Sorry.
You've actually only conceded 8 goals, which is the fewest number of goals of anyone, joint with about 4 other teams, in the last 10 games as well. And finishing off for Adam, Adam's number is number 7.
Oh, for goodness
sake. The answer may have been given by Niall in one of the suggestions he just made.
I wasn't listening to what he said.
No one ever listens to Niall, I know.
What is that about?
That is positively rude, that is.
I was more worrying about. I was worrying about the question that I'm going to get.
You should give him a difficult number next time, Mark, like pi.
Pi, that is
7.
So I know what the answer is, I reckon.
7.
Largely because I did say it, I think.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Adam, if the amount of goals we've conceded is 8...
Well, it's not the amount of goals you scored.
Yes,
it is.
It's the number of goals. Look at that. Really? Alan gets it right on the first guess. Hallelujah.
Well, Niall gave me a little help.
7 goals in the last 10 games. The fewest number of goals of anyone in League 2 over the last 10 games.
The few? What? Oh, my
God. And yes, I did send this to you guys in a tweet earlier on, but never mind. I know no one clearly reads the tweets I send over either, so...
I don't know why we end on the numbers, which is the most stressful part of it. And also, they're all getting more and more depressing. It's not on.
Like Matt said at the top, if you have a team that wins some games, then it's not so depressing and we have better things to talk about. Anyway, gentlemen, you've all been a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you to Niall. Not so much of a rant, actually, for a change. Thank you to Matt. Good luck with the crowdfunding. Now I understand what's going on and I won't lose my money. I'll get online there and pledge my 20 quid or whatever it is. And Adam will obviously put the link on the overall
Mark, podcast. Mark, you're donating £500, remember? That's a deal.
Yeah.
No, I don't earn as much as you, my friend. Sadly.
All right, gang. Great stuff.
Good to see you all. Thank you, Adam.
Thanks.
Have a good week, everybody. Come on, you dons, and fingers crossed for some points, God knows how many, out of the forthcoming games against Stevenage tonight, by the time you hear this, and obviously on Saturday as well. And good luck to the ladies who I believe are playing at Plough Lane on Sunday, but check that out on the AFC Women's website. We've been Same Old Wombles. That's been episode 27. Check us out on Spotify and anywhere else you can find your podcast. Thank you very much and good night.
Hey, good work, everybody.